So we just started the new text called Kindle Light. It's a very, how shall I say, it's a text that can help us understand the concepts of spirituality and Vedanta, and at the same time talks about the highest truth. So it appeals to beginners and advanced students, and it shows us how we can kindle, how we can make our life bright with knowledge. And last week, we had studied about the art of right contact, how through facing hardships and difficulties, a person's life becomes better. Just as a knife, when it is placed on a rough surface, it sharpens better. Or gold, when it goes through fire, ore becomes glitter. So man also can look at problems as opportunities for growth. So we talked about that last week, and today we are going to cover a different topic called man's heritage. What is my right? What do I have a right to get? And what is my goal? And where do I come from? Where is my knowledge coming from? That is heritage. Like you say, my heritage, I'm from, America or India or South America, and where I come from and what is the direction of my culture. So here, as a human being, of course, we have different race and cultures and different communities. But as a human being, what is my purpose in life? What is my goal in life? So he starts out by saying that the goal of life is to be independent. He said, well, we are independent. We are a free country. We can vote for the president, we can vote for a senator and congressman and so on. But the freedom they are talking about is freedom from dependence on sense objects. Because our eyes want to see, our tongue wants to taste, we want to hear, we want to smell, we want to touch, we want to possess, we want to acquire. So constantly our senses are running out to acquire more objects or more, see more things or hear more things or get more things. So we become slave to our senses. And anytime we get what we want, we become happy. When I don't get what I want, I become unhappy. My mind one day is up, whoa, I'm so happy, and second day is down. So they say that do not be like a log of wood, like a log of wood on the water. As every wave comes, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. And that is our mind. One day I'm up, one day I'm down. So they say be like a lighthouse. Now, what is the difference between a log of wood and a lighthouse? A lighthouse, first of all, is firmly established in the ground. Does not shake with every wave. It stays firmly established. Not only that, but a lighthouse becomes a guide for ships. Ships that are lost in the storm and they're looking for a port, the light of the lighthouse guides them to the safety of the harbor. Similarly, a man of wisdom, unlike us, we are up and down, we get, disturbed and happy, unhappy. A man of wisdom is so firmly established in his knowledge, in his understanding, like a lighthouse is firmly established in the truth, and the world cannot shake such an individual. And we find the lives of all great saints and prophets, the world tried everything. Look at Jesus, look at Buddha, look at all the Sikh gurus, look at all the saints that were born in India, Sant Gyaneshwar and Tukaram. All these great saints had so many problems, but it did not deviate them from the truth, did not deviate them from their true understanding. Not only they remained firm in their understanding and in their contact with God, with the spiritual self, but they became a source of guidance for us. And that's why we see the scriptures, the Bible, the Quran, the Guru Granth Sahib, the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedas, the Upanishads. So these great masters became a guide for us to follow and guide us safely through the storms of this world to the safety of the Lord, to the safety of the self. And the Lord is nothing but the Lord within. So to guide us to go within and find the inner self. But in our case, what we do is we run after likes and run away from dislikes. I like this, I run away. I like this, I run out too. And so we are constantly chasing after what we like and running away from what we dislike. So they say our mind is one way. I'm running. Where? Towards like and running away from dislikes. The masters tell us that you should become in such a way that there are no likes and dislikes. Everything I love. There are, in our case, I like this person, I don't like this person. A man of wisdom loves everybody. So his mind is two-way. It's not only one way, but towards dislikes also. And so things even that are giving him problem in his mind, he has equal love for both. Somebody likes me, I love him. Somebody dislikes me, I still love him. That is the man of wisdom. But in our case, we have so many things and so many people I like. And so many things and so many people I dislike. So say I have 25 people that I dislike. 25 people and 20 things. 25. And then I have 25 things and people I like. So what I have done is I have given my remote control to these 50 people and these 50 things. If I get this, I become happy. If I don't get this, I become unhappy. So where is my remote? In the things. Or if this person smiled at me, I'm happy. If this person didn't smile, I'm unhappy. So again, this person has my remote where he can twist it and make me happy, make me unhappy, just as the way can remote change the channel in the TVs. So in a house, suppose there is one remote and there are three people who want to operate. Each one wants the remote. What will happen? There'll be conflict, right? The child wants to watch the Disney channel, the mother wants to watch, you know, her favorite soap, and the father wants to watch football. And so each one is fighting for one remote, three people. Imagine if there are 50 remotes and they're all directed at us, but that is what we do. We give the remote of our happiness to others. A wise person keeps the remote of his happiness with himself. So nobody can make such a person unhappy because he has found the joy within, the joy of Om, the joy of the Lord, the joy of within. And such a person cannot. But we say, where can we get this wisdom? How I should live my life? What I should do? What is my heritage? So they say the scriptures. The scriptures are like a compass, just as, of course, nowadays we have GPS. But in the old days, when mariners were traveling, they would have a compass which would tell them which is north, which is east, west, south. Or they would use the pole star, you know, the north star. Okay, that is my north. And so even if they don't have a compass, knowing where is north, they are able to. So the scriptures are my north star. The scriptures are my compass. And I should use them to guide me in the right direction. But then people say, won't this person become like a statue? I have no likes, I have no dislikes. If somebody praises me, somebody criticizes me. No, the person is not like a statue. In fact, the person, because like a statue, if the crow sits on him, the example, he's the same. If you put a garland, this person has spontaneous love for all. So his heart is full of love and compassion for everybody. It's not that this person becomes a statue. In fact, you and I, we may only love very selective people, but this person has spontaneous love for all, but his head is always in the knowledge. So he never deviates from his truth. For himself, he will be tough. If there's a problem to me, I will bear it cheerfully. But if somebody else is crying, his heart bleeds. So that is the sign of a man of wisdom, where this person loves all, but if some sorrow comes to him, he rises above the sorrow. He says, I have physical pain, that's fine, I'll deal with it. I'll still do what I have to do. I have some mental, somebody says something, person remains calm. Somebody criticizes, he remains calm. calm, undisturbed. Because in this world, there will be always people you like who like you or people who don't like you. People who love you, people who criticize you. If you are going to let that affect your happiness, then you just become a pawn in their hands, like in chessboard. You know, the pawn we can move around, that is how we become. But even though we have read the scriptures, even though the guru has taught us, we become forgetful. We forget. When I hear this, it's very clear. The moment we go out of the class or we are not reading anymore and somebody says something, I get disturbed, or somebody says, doesn't like me, I get disturbed. So we forget this knowledge. That's why repeated listening and reading this book and these scriptures is very, very important, because when you listen repeatedly, the knowledge becomes firm in your mind. Talking about forgetting, this man goes to the doctor. He says, doctor, I have two problems. So doctor says, two problems? What are they? He says, one problem is I am very forgetful. I forget everything. Doctor says, what is the second one? He says, what second one? So that is how we are. We go with our problem, but then we forget. So what is the solution? The solution is to live an alert life. What do we mean by alert life? What we mean is that one has to be constantly watchful of what my mind is doing at this moment. Because if we are not, our mind very quickly slips into problems, into stress, into difficulties. So I have to be alert and watch my mind, because all problems start in the mind. When the mind wants something, then the hand reaches for it, or the eyes want to see it, or the tongue wants to eat it. I want to possess it. I want to touch it, even though it is not good for me. So the problems start in the mind. So they say, be very alert and watch the activity of the mind. The only way to control the mind is, one is by forceful control. No, I won't think about the object, or I won't. Other one is to watch the mind and let it move around, but I am watching. The moment you become a witness of the mind, start watching the mind becomes quiet. And same thing in meditation. If we are sitting for meditation and the mind is racing, you are forcibly trying to control the mind. No. Say, just become a witness. Watch the mind and let the mind go freely. And the moment you start watching the mind instantly becomes quiet. So they say, live alert life. Alert, quiet, alert and vigilant. Swami Chinmayananda always used to say, in meditation, there are three things to do. Quiet, alert, vigilant. So quiet is, how do you quieten your mind? We know that, by observing the breath, by relaxing the body, by chanting the mantra Om, or whatever our mantra is, so you become quiet. And then once it becomes quiet, you become very alert and watch the mind. And the moment the mind deviates from its silence, you're vigilant. You're watching it, not letting it deviate. Bring it back. Deviates, bring it back. So that is how you learn to quieten the mind and station the mind in the Lord within. So being a witness is a very, very important meditation technique. So that is what they say. Be alert and vigilant. At the same time, the mind gets very agitated. So one has to consciously awaken to this truth and move your mind from agitation to silence. And that is a technique that you can learn by practice and by reducing our desires. See, the more desires I have, I want this, I want that, I didn't get it, I didn't. The more desires I have, the more vasanas I have, the more agitated I become. So slowly reduce your desires, make your mind peaceful, and consciously shift your mind from agitation to silence. And with practice, you can do that. Initially, the mind is, it's racing, it's controlling me. But with practice and with detachment, that's what in the sixth chapter of the Gita, the teacher says, Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagya na chagrihyate. With practice and with detachment, you can quieten the mind. And then there is a very beautiful teaching which says, lift yourself by yourself. Udaret atmanatmanam. So we always look for help, you know, from the teacher, from the scriptures, from our friends, from our... Yes, you can look for help from others. There is nothing wrong with that. But if you want to lift yourself, only you can lift yourself. Your teacher cannot do it. This Bible cannot do it. The scriptures cannot do it. Your friends cannot do it. Your spouse, your children. If you want to grow spiritually, even in the world, if you want to become a good golfer, can somebody else play golf for you? If you are hungry, can somebody else eat for you? No. If you want to be successful in business, you have to work hard. So similarly, in spirituality, they say, lift yourself by yourself. And once having lifted yourself, do not fall back down. See, after many lifetimes, we have become humans. Whether you believe in the law of Darwin's law of evolution or whether you believe in reincarnation, either way, they say in our scriptures, 8.4 million births you have taken before you become a human being. 8.4 million births, 84 lakh. And so you have become a human being and risen to the top of the evolutionary ladder. You know, we are above the monkeys and the dogs and the elephants and the plants and birds and fish. And from human, you have to become superhuman, become a saint, become a prophet. So constantly, my goal of life should be to get better and better, improve, improve, improve. But what happens is that in our case, suddenly some conflict comes, some problem comes, some temptation comes. And the mind instantly goes and I fall from my... And we find in the lives of so many, you know, priests and spiritual masters and teachers, you know, who were so wonderful, all of a sudden they fall prey to some temptation, or great leaders, you know, I mean presidents or prime ministers or heads of state or heads of some corporations. Suddenly they get involved in some problem, get involved with some secretary or something. And next you know there is a lawsuit and they have to resign the job. So they say that once you have risen, whether it's in the corporate world, whether it's in politics, whether it's in spirituality, keep on growing, and once you have risen, do not fall back. Do not fall back to your old ways of foolishness, ignorance, wrong, doing wrong things. Because you are your own best friend and you are your own best enemy. Who is my friend? Me, myself. Who is my enemy? Me, myself. If my mind is in the right direction, it becomes my friend. If my mind is in the wrong direction, it becomes my enemy. So then they say, is this teaching practical? You know, it seems very difficult to apply. You know, constantly I have to be alert and constantly I have to think. And then I have to make sure I'm going in the right direction. Then I have to make sure I love everybody. Then I have to make sure I keep my emotions under my control. I don't hate anybody. And then I don't get angry. It seems very difficult. Is it practical? You know, that is always the question people ask. Is it that easy to live this kind of life? So the answer is, what you practice is practical. If you don't practice, it is not practical. So to give an example, say I want to learn how to ride a bike. So I go buy a bike and then I get on. And then what happens? I go a few pedals and I slip and I fall. And I scratch my knee, I hit my shoulder, my face. I get up again and again I get on the bike and there is somebody helping me and teaching me. So after a few hours of struggling and falling, I learned how to ride a bike. So one is the theory of riding a bike. I have read in the book how to ride a bike. I watched the videos on YouTube how to ride a bike. But until I myself get sit on the bike and actually go out on the street and go through traffic, then and then alone I know how it is to ride a bike. So similarly in our spiritual life, one is the theory. I read the book in the books. I read in the scriptures what I should do, what I should not do, what is right, what is wrong. But theoretically, I have studied it. But when I go out in the world, I deal with the traffic, with the people, then I fall down. So wise person, just as the biker falls, gets up from the bike and gets on the bike, again falls. So similarly, in the world, when there are falls, when there are problems, a wise person will get up again, dust himself. Okay, I want to go back on the spiritual path. But what we do, we condemn ourselves. You know, I'm such a sinner. I don't think I can progress on the path of spirituality. But the Lord says in the Gita that no matter how many sins you have committed, if you come to me with full love and dedication, I will accept you and forgive all your sins. Just as a mother, a child has fallen and is dirty in the dirty water and it's all filthy and all. The mother doesn't say, oh, you're filthy. The moment the child cries, oh, he has fallen, she'll go pick him up, clean him, and okay, don't cry, pat him and all. So similarly, the Lord, no matter how much we have fallen, how many wrong things we have done, if we cry for the Lord and ask for his grace, the Lord is ever ready to pick us up like a loving mother. And in life, it is very important to have a goal, to have an ideal. Just as a basketball player has Michael Jordan as his ideal, a football player may have Joe Montana, baseball player has Babe Ruth. So similarly, a physicist may have Einstein or Newton as his role model. So similarly, in our case, what is our ideal? Our ideal is the saints, the prophets, the masters who have come before us and have given us this wonderful knowledge. And we have them in every faith. Every faith has these great masters. So make them your ideal. If they can accomplish it, why can't I accomplish it? If they can reach, why can I not reach? So the goal should end. What is the goal? The goal is consciousness, God. Reaching him, knowing him, becoming one with that reality, and ultimately losing one's ego, losing one's individuality in that totality. And one, a person who has realized and become one with God, and not only he becomes one with God, he becomes one with all, because they're all that divinity. Everybody, every plant, every bird, every fish, every animal, every human being is that. So that understanding comes. So that is man's heritage, to be free of the sense objects of likes and dislikes. Make the scriptures your goal. Love everybody, but keep your head above the clouds, above the ignorance, and lift yourself by yourself. Because this knowledge that we have here is something that we can apply today itself. We can apply tomorrow. It's not something that in the future, maybe 5 years from now, the spiritual knowledge is something that is relevant here and now, and itself can lift our life to the higher. So that is the essence of this beautiful chapter. Some of it I took from the book, some of the ideas that I got from my other sources. So I think it's a very inspirational chapter, because it inspires us to do the right thing and rise above our personal likes and dislikes. Likes and dislikes does not mean what kind of food I eat or what kind of clothes I wear. Likes and dislikes means the insistence that this alone is, it should be like that, my way or the highway, where in the process of getting what I like, I break the law, or I hurt others' feelings, or speak badly. So that is called likes and dislikes. Not that I like to eat Chinese food, or I like to eat Mexican. That's not important. What is important is how, in trying to carry out my wishes, if I'm hurting others or if I'm doing things illegal or immoral, that is what is called likes and dislikes. So thank you very much. Any questions, any comments about this?
I think we don't know whether we like it or not. Without our knowledge, we are into that. If we know that we are liking, we may know that we have to dislike there. But how to know that consciousness to make it, whether I'm in that, I like it or not?
That's a very good question. I think one is I like something, but one is I become so dependent that without it, my life is incomplete. If I am thinking constantly about it and I cannot live without it, and to get it I do things which are harmful to others or I lie and cheat. So that is where it becomes an addiction. See, it's okay to eat, but when I'm all the time thinking of food, then I'm, you know, that. Or it could be anything. It could be anything. It could be an addiction to power, where it's okay to be successful, but my goal is to be so successful in the company that I become president. I don't matter how many people I hurt, how many people I step over, how many people I stab in the back. So when these things become, take over my mind, that is when it is a problem. Otherwise, obviously, you know, there's a particular kind of food you grew up with, say eating Indian food, and you are going to eat Indian food. So there is not that I like or I don't like. That is how I grew up. But when the insistence is there that this is the only way, then that is the way you have to be very alert. So there is a difference between a like and between an overwhelming desire to possess. So that is called alert living. You know, live alertly. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yes, thank basically, you. We have to go about the likes and dislikes.
Yes. Right. Because in world, there will be things that we like and we dislike, but I have to be the same towards all. That's why in the Gita, it says, samashatraucha mitrecha tatha manap manayoho. He says the person is the same among people who like him and people who don't like him. People whom he consider, who consider him a friend, and somebody considers him an enemy. Jesus was the same. He even forgave those who were his, you know, his worst enemies. And that's how we find in all the saints, that they have no hatred towards anybody. And same thing about objects. They don't let objects possess them. Yes, they have things. You obviously, you need them. You need a car, you need a house, you need a pen, but you need money. But that does not become my goal of life. My goal of life is to reach God, to know the spirituality within. And whatever helps me in my spiritual goal, I practice. What is an obstacle in my goal, I stay away from. So the goal of life has to be very clear. That's why the compass, which directs us where to go. So similarly, the scriptures make my goal clear. Yes.
I had a teacher say, for the likes, I say, you have preferences. And that way, preference means you may not get it, you may not get it. So it's kind of like, puts a little less weight in saying, I like, becomes like more of an ego identification. And said, well, it seems, you know, I prefer, you know, this kind of thing, but you're okay without it.
Right. So. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. That I prefer, but if it's not there, I'm still fine.
Right.
Yeah. The ability to be fine regardless of what happens. See, in life, you're always, not always going to get what you want, and not always people are going to praise you. But I am fine either way. If this person smiles at me, I'm fine. If he doesn't smile at me, I'm still fine.
And that's very counter Western culture, too.
Yeah.
We're taught, they want everyone, you know, buy this, you gotta have this, you gotta have that, you know. It's interesting.
Right. No, it's all over the world, the same
but
culture. You've got to have
but
it.
But it's really, really saturated.
Right. With all the TV and the advertising and all the billboards that if you don't have the latest iPhone, you are useless. Or if you don't have the latest car or the latest this or the latest that. If you don't belong to this country club, you are a nobody. You know, all those things. Yeah, you're right. It's getting worse all over the world because the population is increasing and the resources are limited. So people are fighting for those, you know, limited resources. That's what is happening.
For things that don't even really matter.
Right, right. Very true.